I will call to order the first meeting of the 2018 legislative session of the Government Operations and Elections Policy Committee, and this will be for Tuesday, the 27th of February, 2018. Members, we have our agenda before us, and the first order of housekeeping that we have. In your packets, there will be two pieces of information that are minutes from our meeting on May 12th of 2017 and the meeting of September 25th of 2017. Representative Nelson, have you had a chance to review those minutes, and are you willing to move them this morning before the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move approval of both sets of minutes that are in the packet.
Procedurally, we'll just take them one at a time. Did you have a preference on which one you'd like to move first? There's not a May 25th. We cannot have a hybrid of meeting, Representative Nelson. So let's move the May 12th. Any discussion? Hearing none and seeing none, all those in favor of the May 12th adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? And the May 25th. September 25th, moved by Representative Nelson, 2017. Questions? Seeing none and hearing none, all those in favor of the September 25th minutes being adopted signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The next order of business that we have are some bills that were on the general register that have come back to us at the end of last session, and a few bills that we're going to be hearing. But before that, I want to make a few introductions of some new people who are going to be with us on the committee this year. And first of all, I'd like to introduce the page that we have here today, Santa, and she will be with us, and she believes she's going to be permanently assigned, but we'll call her the page of the day for sure and hope that she will be able to stay with us. Would you please, members, welcome Santa to the committee. And as does happen sometimes, we do have both on the DFL and the GOP side some promotions and different assignments of people. And Steve Bartle, who was our CLA last session, has moved on to be a CA with another committee in the House. And we are pleased to be joined today by Megan Plotz, who is going to be our new CLA. Would you please help me welcome Megan? And with that, the first three bills that we have before us are bills that were on the general register that the committee had heard last year and had been voted out and debated and public testimony taken on. But before we can move them back to the general register for consideration by the body as a whole, we do have some technical amendments that we need to make because of date references that were in there. The bill authors are available if there are questions. Our plan is not to take testimony since these had been heard. There literally are just some technical corrections that are on here. The first bill that I would like to move before the committee for consideration and amendment for the technical corrections is House File 329. It is a bill that was authored by Representative Rarick, and it is a bill that deals with fireworks. And the amendment, the A9 amendment, which everyone has, I would also like to move the A9 amendment to amend Representative Rarick's bill to change the effective date of 2017 to the effective date of 2018. Any discussion on the amendment? Hearing none and seeing none, all those in favor of the A9 amendment to House File 329, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries. The bill as amended, to re-refer this to the general register, I will move the bill to the general register, House File 329. Any discussion? Hearing none and seeing none, all those in favor of re-referring House File 329 to the General Register as amended, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The next bill, House File 1393, is a bill by Representative Fenton, who's also a member of the committee. And Representative Fenton, if you want to move your bill and talk about your technical corrections, and we will take that matter. I move the bill before the committee, 1393. Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this 1393, as you remember, is the I'd like to move this to the general register, is the June primary bill.
And Representative, you have an amendment if you want to speak to the amendment.
Essentially what the amendment does is changes the date. In this original bill, it was to go into effect in 2018. This pushes it out to 2020. It also, on the appointment list and the duties of political parties and Secretary of State, instead of May is March 1st. And again, in 1.19 from May to March 15. So that is the amendment, just dealing with the dates.
So Representative Fenton moves the A6 amendment to House File 1393, the June primary bill that was brought back to the committee at the end of last session. Discussion to the A6 amendment. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you. Obviously, since it's a year later, changing the year that this would take effect makes sense. I'm just curious about the other change here. It changes. I'm just wondering if Representative Fenton can explain that, because it does appear that this is actually changing a date and might have a more substantive effect.
My apologies.
Representative Fenton.
Those changes were actually in 1393. The only change that we're doing is 2018 to 2020. That's the only new piece. The other dates are actually the same as in 1393. My apologies for that confusion.
Representative Freiberg, I also believe one of the reasons why some of those May and March dates are changed in the amendment is we did an elections bill last year that had some conformity changes, so this bill needs to conform to the changes that were adopted in 2017 in the elections bill at that point. So that's my understanding of why those May and March dates have been modified as well. Other discussion to the A6 amendment. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I did not vote for this bill when it came out the last time.
And you plan on voting for it this year? Well, thank
you
for
the change of heart. Mr. Chair, on line 1.25, if we change that 2020 to 2120, I'd be more than happy to vote for it.
Oh, well, you know.
But
Representative Nelson, if you would have had an amendment to the amendment, we might have been able to address that. But you did miss the deadline for amendments, and I do appreciate your willingness to try to find common ground, though. Anything else, Mike? Okay. Any other discussion on the A6 amendment? Hearing none and seeing none, all those in favor of the A6 amendment to House File 1393 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The bill is now before us as amended. Discussion on the bill 1393 as amended. I will move that it be re-referred from the committee on government operations and elections to the general register. Seeing no discussion, hearing no discussion, all those in favor, we refer to House File 1393 to the general register. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. And we also have our third and final re-referral, and this is a Representative Eklund bill. And Representative Eklund is not here, but he did, because he has another conflict with this committee meeting time, and he has a bill, House File 1689, dealing with county historical societies levies for cities and towns. Again, this is a bill that we have seen previously. We do have a technical amendment to this as well. And so, there is no technical amendment. It's the bill as passed out of committee, 1689. I will move House File 1689 before the committee. Representative Nash, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't remember, but when Representative Eklund presented this before as a freshman, did he bring any inducements of a food-like nature to get people to vote for this? I don't remember.
Well, maybe that might be considered a bribe if he did it in the way you've mentioned it.
Okay, did he bring any treats to help people smile
on the
inside?
I'm not sure if he fed the committee or not in short order. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Are you offering us some of those donuts?
Well, those aren't my donuts, so I can't.
Yeah, they will make their way around.
Yeah, I'm not sure whose donuts those were. Oh, Representative Jessup has brought donuts and donut holes for those of you who don't want full donuts. Hey. Other discussion to House File 1689. Again, it's as was passed out of the committee, being re-referred to the general register. Seeing none and hearing none, I move that House File 1689 be re-referred from the Committee on Government Operations and Elections to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the motion prevails. New business before the committee, our first bill will be Representative and Chair Erickson. I did see her here. So as Representative Erickson makes her way to the testifying table, I will bring before the committee House File 2636 for consideration by the committee. And with that, I'm going to welcome Chair Erickson and Representative Erickson. The bill is before the committee. We'll go ahead with your testimony and any testifiers that you may have. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This 2636 is a bill that authorizes the governing body of a town, which I call a township, which I live in Rome, Minnesota, to appropriate money for grants to nonprofits that operate community food shelves. It is, Mr. Chair and members, just extending the same thing that we have allowed counties or home rule charters or statutory cities to do. So that's the gist of the bill. I know that I did talk to Ms. Dyson about governing body. I guess there's some question about governing body of townships, whether it's on the date that we meet in March for our meeting and we vote as a body, or if it's the supervisors. And I know I talked to the Minnesota Association of Townships, and they blessed this bill. I don't know if they're here today to clarify that, but I would presume it's supervisors at any of their general meetings. However, maybe we need clarification.
Representative Erickson, you have no other testifiers that you're bringing forward this time?
No, I do not.
Okay. Ms. Dyson, did you want to comment on Chair Erickson's references and comments? She did reference you as maybe being someone who can provide some clarity. Ms. Dyson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the statutes are inconsistent on this, but as a preferred drafting matter, defining who is the governing body for a township is useful, because in some contexts it is the board of, or it's the electors of the town at the annual town meeting where they decide how much to levy and spending decisions. At other times, it's the town board of supervisors. And so I thought that it might be useful to clarify it. Obviously, as I said, in other statutes, it just says town. And I believe that the Township Association generally interprets that to mean the town board of supervisors in talking with townships. But that was the question that I raised with the author, whether or not she wanted to clarify for sure who the governing body is for the purposes of this bill.
Is there anyone from the Township Association here that would like to testify on the matter? Okay. Ms. Dyson, is it your belief that we do have clarity, that we could move forward with the bill, or are there issues that we could be opening up that were unintended if we move forward on here?
Mr. Chair, as I said, both in the revisor's drafting manual and my understanding, is that it's useful to be clear. If you wish, I do have language that would clarify it, and if the chair is willing to consider an oral amendment that I have actually written out for the committee legislative assistant, we could do that. Otherwise, I can work with the author for a floor amendment, however you wish to proceed.
Ms. Dyson, I appreciate your willingness to bring forward that. I guess I would ask if the author of the bill is willing to entertain the oral amendment that you're bringing forth for clarification. And Representative Nelson, I would also ask if you're okay with us offering an oral amendment to the bill as well.
Mr. Chair, normally short oral amendments, we accept those. So I mean, I don't know what it says, but if she could read that.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it says either. I'm just checking to see on the ground rules that the players are okay with us moving.
As earlier, I could have made an oral amendment. That would have been short enough. That would have been an oral amendment.
Well, fair enough. Fair enough. Duly noted. Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair and members, my only concern would be as far as being a citizen of a township is that we have our annual meeting in March. It is very poorly attended, at least in my township. I vote by absentee because I'm always here, because it is the second Tuesday in March. So I think that because the Minnesota Association of Townships has not brought forth a concern, that I would prefer that we wait until the floor for an amendment so that they get a chance to weigh in as to whether or not they think this clarification needs to occur in statute. When supervisors of a township can make a decision at an appropriate time for food shelves, I think that serves us better, because there are needs for food shelves frequently, whether it's in the metro urban or rural Minnesota. So I think as the need arises, I would prefer that the supervisors have the ability to make that decision. But because Matt is not here, I'm a little reluctant to go forth with an amendment.
So here's what I'm going to suggest that we do. I'm going to suggest that we take the bill as you have presented it, and that you work with Ms. Dyson and others to get clarity. And so if this bill does come up on the, because it's coming from this committee to the General Register, that before it be taken up on the floor, that you have clarity, and perhaps a clarifying amendment at that point would be sufficient. I think we know at the committee level what we're trying to do is to get the clarity about where that lies. So I, and again, I will refer to Representative Nelson for his thoughts on it as the lead from the minority party on the committee. But I do want to get this resolved in the right way so we don't create problems. Representative Nelson.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I understand the representatives from the township aren't here. I would prefer at most times, to do committee work in committee. And by doing an amendment on the floor, we'd actually be doing committee work in committee. On the floor, we don't have the ability to get testimony from the public. But in this situation, I think this is a simple enough clarification that I think we'll let this go through as of now. But like I said, I prefer to do committee work in committee, and so we can take testimony, we can have opposing views from the public on that. So, but in this case, I think I'll let it go forward.
Yeah, you're very consistent about your position of committee work in committee, and I do share that as well. And that's why I ask about where we're at and make sure that we have that. Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, I appreciate your comments, too. Maybe you want to lay this bill over, and I will call Matt. I don't know what your list of proposals coming forth looks like. I mean, I don't know if you're on overload, as some policy committees can become. But, you know, if you want to just lay this over today, and I will check with them and come back perhaps to your next meeting.
Yeah, and I'm happy to lay it over to do committee work in committee on that. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this it seems kind of some subtle movement to this bill, the potential change. I'd be comfortable with just moving the bill forward today.
Again, I'm going to defer to the authors what her wishes are on this. We've got, I think, again, we know globally what we're trying to do here, but we're also, you know, everybody's back and we're all trying to be nice and polite, which is great. I want government to move forward if it's going to happen on here. So, Representative Erickson, I am going to drop the ball firmly in your court as to what your wishes are as the author on the bill. We've got agreement to move it. We've also got agreement to lay it over. If that is your wishes, you are the author. It is your bill. I'm going to defer to your wishes on this.
Mr. Chair, I prefer you lay it over so we could check with the Minnesota Association of Townships. I realize that the cities received authorization a long time ago, 1995, and counties in 1998. And because we have this anomaly within our townships, and I did speak with Ms. Dyson about that, realizing that we have city councils and we have county commissioners, and they're the governing body, I think I prefer you lay it over, and I will check with Matt, and you reschedule me when you have time.
What I am going to do, though, is I am going to take public testimony right now so that we can expedite that when we do with the clarification on that. So are there any other member questions at this time before I open it up to the public? There were no testifiers that had signed up. Other member questions at this time? Seeing none, is there anyone from the public present today, either in written or oral testimony, for the committee on the bill before us, which is 2636? Any public testimony on House File 2636? Seeing none, Representative Erickson, I will lay the bill over for future consideration by the committee. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And our next bill on the agenda today is House File 1975, Representative Vogel. As Representative Vogel and his testifiers are making their way to the testifying table this morning, I will move House File 1975 before the committee to be re-referred to the General Register. With that, Representative Vogel, welcome to the committee, sir. I'm going to ask you to go ahead and explain your bill to the committee, and then we will get to your testifiers and public testimony all in due course here. So, Representative Vogel, welcome to the committee. If you will tell us about House File 1975.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is an amendment, and I'm not sure how you want to handle that.
Yeah, Representative Vogel, we do have the DE1 amendment, which is a clarifying amendment that will delete some of the language in your bill. I will move the DE1 amendment before the committee for consideration. Members, questions on the DE1 amendment Before I do that, Representative Vogel, you may want to explain to the committee the purpose of your DE1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. The DE1 is language that was worked out between different parties that have been in the conversation on this bill to pretty much bring what we refer to as peace of the valley. And therefore, rather than going through and just doing a few words in the original bill, it was easier to just do a DE and come back with the language that's been agreed upon with all of the parties that have been conversing on this.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. Members, questions on the DE1 amendment? Seeing none and hearing none, to get the bill in the shape that the author wishes, all those in favor of the DE1 amendment to House File 1975 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. Representative Vogel, to House File 1975 as amended.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair and committee members. House File 1975 is a rather simple bill, but it's had a somewhat of a complex nature getting here. It basically clarifies public bidding when it comes to water tower repair. And I was contacted by Ms. Galari, who I'll introduce in a minute, that lives in the district I represent and has the business in Eagan, that they felt that the language in the statute was allowing cities sometimes to go around the public bidding statutes. So what this is meant to do is clarify that when there is a actual water tower repair going on that cost over $100,000, that basically they're following the same open bidding process as we would expect in any other statute. What's impressed me here is that a lot of times we have bills brought to us by outside interest or lobbying firms. This was an instance where somebody in the industry saw something that they felt should be corrected and brought it to me as an idea. I introduced a bill, but they've actually gone around and talked to people individually on this. So to me, it's a bill that is necessary to pass because it clarifies, but also it's a real good example of citizen government involvement, because the people that have been working on this are not paid lobbyists. They're small business owners that saw something that they feel needs to be corrected and went about doing it by talking to people and spending a lot of time here. So I'd like to compliment them at that. And also, we did work with the League of Minnesota Cities on this as well to find language that would be suitable. And many conversations there, which is the result of the amendment in front of you. So with that, I'm going to introduce Ms. Tracy Glory, who is the CEO of TMI Coatings, and she's going to lead the discussion on the technicalities of the bill. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I would ask that you recognize the testifier.
Thank you, Representative Vogel. Ms. Glory, welcome to the committee. What we do is we'll ask you to, before you testify, state your name and first name and last name, and we will then ask you to identify who you're with and then proceed with your testimony. And when you're done, members may have questions, and so we'll just see what happens as we go through. But again, welcome to the committee. State your first and last name and who you are representing before you begin with your testimony.
Tracy Gliori, TMI Coatings.
Hello and good morning. My name is Tracy Gliori, and there's a gentleman here with me. His name is Scott Salmon, and he's a construction manager at TMI Coatings. And Scott will talk to you about the particulars with what's happening under the current statute. And Kim Price, our attorney, is going to talk briefly about the legal aspects of the change. I've owned TMI Coatings since 2001. It is a painting and restoration company in Eagan, Minnesota. We restore America's infrastructure. TMI Coatings has approximately 90 employees. We have 25 people in our office in Eagan. We have 5 people in our shop doing maintenance on equipment, and then the remainder of the men are in the field doing construction projects in Minnesota and throughout the country. The three reasons why we are looking to revise this law is to open rehabilitation of water tanks to competition, to add transparency for utility payers and taxpayers, and to lower the cost of the work for everyone, for all taxpayers. And now Scott Salmon is going to present.
Mr. Salmon, if you make your way to the testifying table. And Mr. Salmon, welcome to the committee. Again, we're going to ask you, before you proceed with your testimony, to give us your first and last name and who you represent, and then begin with your testimony.
Sure. Scott Salmon, TMI Coatings. I've worked for TMI Coatings for 19 years. HF 1975 closes a loophole under the current state law that treats water tank rehabilitation contracts differently than any other publicly funded construction contract. Under the current statute, there's a loophole allowing municipalities to directly negotiate for water tower rehabilitation projects. Many of these contracts exceed $1 million. The vast majority of these costs on these contracts are one-time repainting and rehabilitation construction, not ongoing maintenance. Typically, municipalities are approached by an engineering firm who they already have an ongoing relationship with, doing consulting, engineering, and other municipal projects. Due to the loophole on water tank rehabilitation contracts, instead of acting as the city's representative and third-party consulting engineer, the engineering company is able to directly solicit and contract for the water tank rehabilitation work. Cities are awarding these large construction contracts utilizing a direct negotiation closed bid process after receiving only one proposal and one price. The engineering company then is contracting with an out-of-state contractor who has an exclusive relationship with the engineering company. On a direct negotiated closed bid contract, the contractor is the engineer. The municipality does not have the technical experience to interpret the contract and do not have a third-party engineer to represent them on technical issues. As a result, on direct negotiation closed bid projects, the contracts allow for and typically specify inferior materials and workmanship practices to reduce costs. Specifications are written to include materials and workmanship designed to meet the contract term rather than the most cost-effective long-term solution for the owner. These directly negotiated closed-bid contracts frequently include warranties that have an allowable level of rust that would never be specified or allowed in an open-bid project specification. As an example of the difference in the specification requirements, this is a typical warranty for an open. There's a typical warranty for an open publicly bid project that does not allow for any defects or rust. The specifications for directly negotiated closed bid projects reference an ASTM standard for allowable rust within the warranty period. This is the visual example of what's allowed on those contracts.
Mr. Salmon, just as a point of reference, you may want to just pass that around or make it available for the members of the committee to take a peek at it as well. Thank you. And Mr. Salmon, you were referencing the top of the three on that flip chart of
yours. That is the top of the three.
Okay, the top photo members.
Yes.
Yeah, it's also in your packet, but it might be a little bit easier to see it in a more of a colored resolution than a black and white or gray that's in our packets. Proceed, Mr. Selman.
That is the allowable level of rust cities have agreed to under these direct negotiation closed bid contracts. The visual representation is the allowable level of rust on both the inside and the outside for the entire tank. The entire tank could have this level of rusting without any, and still be within the contractual amount allowed. Whereas, on an open, publicly bid project, no rust would be allowed. Not even one of the dots shown on the small sample would be allowed on the entire tank. On open, publicly bid contracts, the number of allowable days within which work must be complete is specified and strictly enforced. Typically, the work specifications require about $1,000 a day to be deducted from the amount owed the contractor for any days the contract is uncompleted beyond the specified completion date. On a directly negotiated closed bid contract written by the engineer who's acting as the contractor, frequently no number of days to complete the work is specified or required. There is no completion date or schedule. Inspections by a certified independent third party on open publicly bid projects typically consists of a full-time inspector on site. The certified inspector is on site all times work is being performed. Under direct negotiation closed bid contracts, inspection oversight is minimized. Directly negotiated closed bid contracts are awarded without the knowledge of other contractors who are qualified and able to perform the same services. In the typical open publicly bid contract process, there is open and fair competition among contractors able to successfully complete the work. In the direct negotiated closed bid process, the contracts are awarded before we or other competitors are aware of the projects. Frequently, work is completed before we are even aware of the projects and have been awarded and completed utilizing the closed bid process. So in summary, HF 1975 would eliminate the conflicting interest between the engineering firm acting as the contractor. It provide better city governmental transparency, and it would open up competition to these projects, which would allow TMI and our competitors to compete for these projects, thereby reducing the cost of these projects and save taxpayer money.
Mr. Solomon, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
We're just going to have you hang right there for just a second. We'll see if members have any questions for you. Members, questions for Mr. Solomon? Seeing none and hearing none, we'll just ask you to kind of hang in the neighborhood in case there are questions that come up. And at this time, our next testifier on the list is Ms. Kimberly Price. Ms. Price, welcome to the committee. We'll ask you again to state your first and last name for the record and then proceed with your testimony. Once again, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kimberly Price, and I'm with Price Law Firm, and I am the attorney for TMI Coatings, and I'm also a registered lobbyist. House File 1975 is a nonpartisan bill, and there is no funding attached to this bill. Through House File 1975, TMI Coding seeks to revise a portion of the Uniform Municipal Contracting Law, Minnesota Statute Section 471.345. Under that law, municipalities must award contracts exceeding $100,000, either by public bid or best value alternative. As Mr. Salmon discussed, a loophole currently exists in Subdivision 5B, which relates only to water tank service contracts, water tank repair, whereby municipalities do not have to use the otherwise required procurement methods for this type of public work. We seek to revise Subdivision 5B to close that loophole. The language that we are working off of for our Delete Everything amendment that you have before you was finalized as a result of a stakeholders group, which included Senator Hall, Senator Coran, the League of Minnesota Cities, the Minnesota Society of Professional Engineers, and the Minnesota representative for the American Council of Engineering Companies. TMI Coatings and the League of Minnesota Cities have been working together on this language through discussions spanning approximately 1 year. House File 1975 is consistent with the stated purpose of the Uniform Municipal Contracting Law, which is set forth in Subdivision 6 of Minnesota Statute 471.345, which I'll read now. Subdivision 6, in part, states applicability of other laws. The purpose of this section, 471.345, is to establish for all municipalities uniform dollar limitations upon contracts which shall or may be entered into on the basis of competitive bids, quotations, or purchase or sale in the open market. And so House File 1975 seeks to bring water tank work within the confines of Subdivisions 3 and 3A, such that if the cost of a contract for construction-related goods and services is estimated to exceed $100,000, municipalities must use either public bid or best value alternative, which are the procurement methods specified in Subdivisions 3 and 3A, to contract for water tank work, just like they are required to contract for all other construction work. Thank you.
Ms. Price, thank you for your testimony. Members, questions of the testifier? Questions of Ms. Price? Seeing none and hearing none, we'll ask you to stay in the neighborhood in case there are some questions that are coming up. And the last testifier that I have on the list, we did have one that was removed, and that brings us to Mr. Hansen. If you'd like to come forward, sir, and again, we'll ask you to identify yourself, first and last name for the record, and then proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Adam Hansen. I'm with the Associated Builders and Contractors of Minnesota. We have over 350 contractor and construction-related members that do commercial, industrial, and municipal work all throughout the state of Minnesota. One of the uniting principles of our membership is the importance of fair and open competition when it comes to public construction contracts. We advocate for a level playing field that gives all contractors, large and small, a chance at winning public construction work. House File 1975 and the DE amendment that was just adopted is straightforward, and that brings that fair and open competition piece to water tower maintenance and repair work. I live in Woodbury, and last summer our city council recently adopted a $1.3 million contract for the repair of a single water tower without soliciting any competitive bids. So this issue hits home to me as well, and it's happening throughout the state more and more frequently. The numerous painting and coating contractors throughout the state, some of whom are members of ours, and all of them being competitors, are equally shut out of a closed bid process that we currently have on the books today. HF 1975 has bipartisan support with three of the co-authors here in this committee today. We respectfully ask for the support on this bill to ensure that fair and open competition for all Minnesota's painting contractors to compete for these projects, as well as transparency and value to taxpayers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Hansen, thank you for your testimony. Members, questions for Mr. Hansen? Seeing none and hearing none, before I go to public testimony, Mr. Johnson from the League of Minnesota Cities is in the audience, and I'm going to ask if he would like to come and testify, since in the testimony for the bill author, the League of Minnesota Cities had been referenced as being neutral, and since we do have a representative, I do want to get him on the record so that either he can corroborate that or share differing thoughts than what were represented by the other testifiers. So with that, I think I've given ample enough time for him to be able to get to the testifying table. Mr. Johnson, if you'll go ahead and introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Craig Johnson, League of Minnesota Cities, and I would not challenge the representation that the bill author made of my position on this. No. we have worked for many
years. Did you or did you not order a coder at Mr. Johnson?
So, Mr. Chair, we have worked for many years on this issue. To be clear, what is being addressed here is an option that cities currently have for how they can do contracting. It's not something that every city has to use. I think most cities still use their normal bid processes for this type of work, but some have chosen to use this this allowance under water tank maintenance provisions of procurement law. And are very comfortable doing that. But in the discussions of this bill as it's moved through the process over the years, we came to this as a, we think, reasonable compromise that protects most of the things that we feel are important in there. And it does cost some cities the opportunity to use this form of contracting, but it does still preserve the ability to do low bid or best value contracting for those portions of the service. And it does still preserve the three existing sections in this water tank maintenance provision of law that talk about protecting small utilities from being essentially bankrupted by a maintenance expense and requires a certified engineer be involved in the process because this is public drinking water. We don't want to have projects going forward without that type of involvement. We've seen other states and how that works out. So we are at this time neutral on this change, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson, for clarifying for the record. Members, questions of Mr. Johnson. We'll go with Halverson and then Quam. Representative Halverson, followed by Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to all the parties for getting together to work on this issue. That's really a good way to do public policy, so I appreciate people coming together. I just have a question out of curiosity. How did water tank maintenance end up with this exception? Why water tank maintenance in particular?
Representative Hellerson, that's to Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Johnson. I assume that Mr. Johnson has some history on this. So,
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Halverson, sadly, I do have a long history on this.
And Brevity on the history.
The short answer, Mr. Chair, is that this section of law was created during a very complex transfer of the Aguaching Nursing Home from
a tribe, to the state of Minnesota, to the city of Walker. And the water system was so completely failed on that that there needed to be protections for the small utilities involved to prevent them from being destroyed by the transfer and the cost of those. So that's where all this came up. I was Senator Dan Stevens and Representative Larry Howes were the ones involved in drafting this, for those who have legislative history and remember some of those names.
Representative Halverson, follow-up? Before I go to Representative Quam, I want to draw your attention this morning to a group that has joined us from the Owatonna Public Schools. It is members of the Alternative Learning Center in Owatonna. Welcome, thank you for being with us, and members, let's welcome. Again, thank you for being here and seeing how Minnesota government works. This is a committee where civility is definitely at hand today, so we like that. We like that. With that, Representative Quam.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will take your last comment to heart, I hope. I would like the testifier to help me understand, do the majority of the people in the cities that are involved and hear these proposals brought forward understand that standard that is often referenced is poorer quality than what would be required if they followed the state guidelines on defects?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I have no idea. We don't communicate with our members in that level of detail on their contracting decisions.
Representative Quam, follow.
Yes, Mr. Chair and members. Frankly, there's a quality standard that's in statute that gets bypassed, and our citizens have poor quality facilities that their drinking water are sitting in now because of it, and I appreciate the author bringing this to light and helping us to try and remedy some past oversights. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Pugh, I have you next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to thank Representative Vogel for bringing this bill and to all of the testifiers for having heightened our awareness about this. I see this as I love your visual, too. Love that you brought a visual. I see this as a very good governance bill that has every potential to save taxpayer resources, and am so pleased with the increased amount of transparency that will be brought to local government as well. So thank you very much.
Representative Pugh, thank you. With that, I'm going to ask if there's anyone present today in the audience that would like to come forward and testify on House File 1975 as amended. We do have someone making their way to the testifying table. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
If you will go ahead and state your name for the record, first and last name, and proceed with
Mr.
your testimony.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dave Oxley. I'm the executive director of the American Council of Engineering Companies of Minnesota. Our name was mentioned earlier in this discussion. I just wanted to cover a little history of what's gone on the last couple of weeks for us. We were contacted by members of the committee to address this bill, and we have done that over the last couple of weeks. On initial review, we really didn't see any need to get involved. Upon further review, we had a question regarding the bill's effect on the procurement of engineering services. As it was written, it could be seen as requiring bidding for engineering services, and we prefer qualifications-based selection. It's really in the best interest of our clients. Over the weekend language, the amendment that's been placed actually addresses that, so that did fix that piece of it. But a day ago, I got a call from a member that does a lot of this work, and they have serious concerns over this legislation. In looking at that and in dealing with this member and what their concerns were, I think they're very valid concerns. The association at this point would recommend that the committee go back, the groups get together, and we reassess this bill and have an opportunity to air out those concerns that were raised by this member firm. And that really is all I have to say.
Sir, just I guess I have a question. Can you you allude to the fact that there's some concerns about how engineering services might be procured in the modification of this bill? Are you willing to this morning delve into that? This is the first, as the chair, I've heard of any concerns on this. So
you know, I have a large membership, and sometimes getting the word through the membership is a challenge. And it was unfortunate that this came as late as it did, but that's not atypical as it moves through the firms. So I don't have a lot that I can add to that discussion other than I think we have concerns over the bill. You know, and from a basic standpoint, communities now can bid the services, or they can use best value, or they can use the current law. This does take away an option, and I think that should be discussed.
Representative Fenton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you said you've just had one member raise concerns since we've gone through this process?
Correct. This firm does a fair amount of work in this realm.
Go ahead.
I think they're quite talented and qualified to do that kind of work.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Fenton.
Is it possible that this current member could be a part of the closed bid process?
Yes. Stroxley.
That would be the case.
Representative Fenton.
No further questions.
Thank you. Other member questions at this time? Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And what this issue of drinking water is not trivial, and I think quality needs to be looked at. In the fact that in statute we have a higher standard of quality, how can the engineering firms be promoting a lower standard than what is guaranteed by the in other words, you say this takes away a process, but in that process you're allowing poorer quality work and a lower standard to be pushed forward through to communities, and not every person in a small town or sitting on a council or mayor is familiar enough, and they see this standard number out there, and they feel that, oh, that's good because it represents quality when it represents poorer quality. And so how do you defend offering poorer quality as, you know, without fixing that when you're pushing for this closed bid way of doing business?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm really not here for a debate, but I will state this. Engineers are licensed for the health, safety, and welfare of the state. That's what their license is. And I would challenge any statement that says that somehow or another an engineer is going to create a lower quality service to a client based on the system. That's not the charge of an engineering firm. I mean, that, and honestly, if they did things like that, word gets around from community to community. They listen to each other. And I think if a firm was doing that, they wouldn't be in business very long.
Representative Quam, follow up.
Just for members, please look at the past history of what has happened in different communities and make your determination yourself.
With that, I'm going to ask if there's any public testimony today. Again, Mr. Oxley was not on the agenda. He came under public testimony today. Is there anyone else who's present today that would like to testify on the matter before the committee, House File 1975 as amended? Again, House File 1975 as amended. Seeing none and hearing none, members, final questions before I bring Representative Vogel up to wrap up his bill? Thank you, Mr. Oxley.
Thank you,
Representative
Mr.
Vogel, we will give you the last word on House File 1975 as amended.
Well, thank you again, Mr. Chair and committee members. You can see the reason that I have the testifiers do most of the explaining, because I know there's a lot of technicalities here. What really interested me when this came about was the idea of public bidding, and really what I look at as a loophole to get around rather large contracts. So I guess you've heard the information that has been given by them. I think it's concise, and the good news is that we have actually worked on this thing. I think it's nearly 2.5 or 3 years now, and they have continually sought the agreement of all the parties involved. And again, I'm just proud of somebody as a small business owner that will take it upon themselves to look for the good of the industry and take the time that they have. So with that, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the committee's action.
Representative Vogel, thank you for bringing the bill forward and the work that you've done on this. And with that, members, I am going to renew my motion that House File 1975, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion carries. Thank you, Representative Vogel. We are done with our official items today on the agenda. Members, I'd like to just give you a little bit of a lay of the land of what the rest of the week is going to look like as it relates to committee work. We will not be meeting tomorrow as a committee, but we will be meeting on Thursday. And Thursday, I have asked the members of the nonpartisan pension commission to be present, as well as the four plan directors from PERA, MSRS, St. Paul Teachers, and TRA, to give the committee an update on where we are at in pension discussions for public pensions. It is something that we do want to accomplish this year, and this is the committee of jurisdiction for that bill, so I wanted to give them a chance to come in and the old cliche, tell you how they spent their summer vacation and give you some updates as to where we are at on the pensions bill. More information will be available later on about our agenda for next week, and with that, no other business before the committee. We are